This is podcast number 113 for the Well-Educated Mother's Heart. Hi, I'm Marlene Peterson, and today I'm sharing the story of Nathan Hale. Continuing with my spotlights of our early heroes who were in love with liberty, I want to now turn to Nathan Hale. I so hope children today still know his story. This version of his story is taken from a 1915 book called Pioneers and Patriots in Early American History by Marguerite Dixon. The story is entitled A Hero Spy. Someday you will learn in your histories how it came about that the English settlements in America grew stronger than their French neighbors on the north or the Spaniards at the south. You will read about the struggle between French and English for the Ohio Valley, and how New France was lost to the mother country and was divided between England and Spain. Thus it happened that England's possessions in the New World spread from the far north to Spanish territory in Florida, and every year the various colonies grew stronger. To tell you how these English colonists quarreled with the government of the mother country would be a long story. Some day you will learn that, too, in your histories. It is enough for us to know that the quarrel arose and that it led to war. No doubt you've already heard of the American Revolution and the independence the colonists won by force of arms. The story I am now to tell you is the story of a hero of that war. In a quiet room of a fine old mansion in the city of New York sat the commander-in-chief of the American Army, the Continental Army as it was known. Before him stood a young officer, respectfully waiting the final orders of his chief. For an hour, General Washington explained the important mission to be undertaken. We do not know what their last words were, as the general arose and took the young man by the hand, but the moment must have been a solemn one for both. Both knew the dangers to be encountered. Both knew the fate awaiting a captured spy. Both knew the scorn of the world for the spy's work. And yet, that work must be done. The important moment in the life of Captain Nathan Hale came when he was barely 21 years old. A fine young fellow he was, tall and well-built, with handsome features and the glow of perfect health. He had graduated from Yale College only 2 years before and had been a favorite with teachers, students, and the townspeople of New Haven. All expected for him a brilliant future, both because of his scholarship and his fine character. No young man of his years put forth a fairer promise of future usefulness and celebrity, says one who knew him in his college days. The war called him from the schoolroom in which he was already making a success as teacher. When the news of the first fighting came, Nathan Hale cried, "Let us march immediately and never lay down our arms until we have obtained our independence." With the first company organized in the town, he set forth. That had been more than a year ago. He had already risen to the rank of captain and was loved by his men as well as his superiors. The army was attempting the impossible task of holding New York against double its own forces of British soldiers and a British fleet. There had been a battle on Long Island which left the British in possession, and now Washington was waiting anxiously to discover the next motive of the British commander, General Howe. Would he make an attack on the city itself? Or would he shut the Americans in by seizing some position north of them? Would he attack from the East River or the Hudson? A constant lookout was kept from heights above the city with powerful field glasses, but nothing was discovered. Washington called his officers to a council of war. There seemed only one thing to do. Someone must go into the British camp and find out the facts it was necessary to know. Scarcely any harder task could have been proposed. It required military knowledge, bravery, coolness, caution, daring, judgment, faithfulness. In fact, it seemed as though no worthy quality of head or heart was not required. Who would undertake so delicate and dangerous a mission? Who would brave the scorn of the world and perhaps suffer death and disgrace to be a spy? It was decided that a meeting of officers should be called and the matter laid before them. The great need must be explained. Perhaps someone would volunteer to make the attempt. The meeting took place. Colonel Knowlton, who commanded the Connecticut Rangers, asked for a volunteer to serve the commander-in-chief. He explained the nature of the service. He reminded the officers that it was a case of desperate need. He appealed to their spirit of adventure, their ambition, their love of country. He paused and looked expectantly about the room. A sudden silence had fallen. There was a look of astonishment on every face, on some a look of indignation. Colonel Knowlton was asking for a spy? It would be impossible to describe the feelings aroused by Colonel Knowlton's words. Many, probably most of the officers before him were young men. They had their dreams of the great things they were to do. Who among them wished the story of his life ended with "hanged as a spy"? For a moment the silence continued. Then came a murmur of protest, and in spite of all that Colonel Knowlton could say, no one would consent to undertake the unwelcome task. Just as the meeting was breaking up, a young captain in Colonel Knowlton's own regiment entered the room. A group of his friends immediately surrounded him, going over once more the question which had so agitated the meeting. The young captain asked few questions. He waited for no details. But, hearing merely that a volunteer was wanted for secret service for the chief, he turned calmly to Colonel Knowlton, saying, "I will undertake it." A perfect storm of remonstrance met him on every side. Surely he did not understand. It was a spy's work the chief wanted. Suppose he should get caught? Had he forgotten the fate of captured spies? But no amount of protest changed the calm decision. "I will undertake it," he had said, "and now I am fully sensible of the consequence of discovery and capture in such a situation. I wish to be useful, and every kind of service necessary for the public good becomes honorable by being necessary." So he answered those who talked of dishonor or disgrace. There is something fine about the unhesitating way in which Nathan Hale made this decision. His country needed a certain service, and against his country's need nothing must count. So resolutely and with his whole heart he went the way leading to danger and death. Almost immediately the young men went to General Washington for orders. Within a few hours he had taken leave of his fellow officers and set out on his perilous mission. The first step of the journey was taken that night. With two companions he traveled along the shore of Long Island Sound, looking for a safe place to cross. This was not easy to find, since the whole western end of Long Island was in the hands of the British, and their boats were guarding the sound. They had reached Norwalk, 50 miles from New York, before they dared make the attempt. Here Hale laid aside his uniform, clothing himself once more in the plain garments of the schoolmaster. Then, bidding his companions await his return, he went on board the sloop which was to take him to the Long Island shore. Once landed, he bade his boatman return for him on a certain day. Then he assumed the character of a schoolmaster who was disgusted with the rebellious Americans and was himself a loyal supporter of King George. He was in search of employment as teacher. In this capacity, he found little difficulty in making friends with loyalists and in gaining entrance to British camps. It is said he visited all the camps on Long Island, crossed to New York, which the British had now taken, and returning to Long Island made his way back to the place where his boatmen were to meet him. So far his work had been done skillfully. In his shoes, beneath loose inner soles, were drawings of British fortifications and information written in Latin on the thinnest of paper. It was night, and before sunrise he would be on his way back across the Sound to safety. Once on the safe side of the Sound, he might resume his uniform and be himself once more, Captain Nathan Hale, on the way to rejoin his regiment north of the city. Only one night. But until he should be safe on board the sloop, he must still be the loyalist schoolmaster with ear and eye quick to see danger, and with nerves strong and alert to meet it. So it happened that a loyalist schoolmaster entered a tavern near the Long Island shore to pass the night. The tavern was a favorite meeting place for loyalists, and they were out in full force when the schoolmaster stepped in. Among them a redcoat or two marked British soldiers. All were merry, and they called the schoolmaster to join them. He scarcely dared refuse. but it was the last night. Tomorrow at dawn he would find his friends awaiting him on the shore. Until then, he must play his part. It is said that a loyalist in the party looked keenly at the stranger, looked and looked again, then silently, still looking, passed out into the night and was seen no more. We wonder at the nerve and coolness of this boy of 21, seated among his bitter foes and obliged to take his part in the gay and careless chatter of the hour. We wonder if he noticed the over-careful stare of the man who left his companions early, and if one thrill of fear disturbed his even heartbeat. At last he was freed from the idle chatter. The house was quiet, and morning was not far off. He watched the slow change of the sky from black to gray. Masses of shadow showed at length as hills and trees. Faint streaks of light appeared in the eastern sky. A rosy flush told of coming day. Silently, the loyalist schoolmaster made his way from the tavern to the shore. His friends must be near. In a few minutes more, this strain would be over. Surely they would not fail him. No, he could see in the half-light of the early morning a boat cautiously approaching the shore. Running swiftly down, he threw up his hand in signal and in a moment was at the water's edge. The rest of the story is almost too sad and awful to tell, but we must hear it to value Nathan Hale at his true worth. Never was more courageous boy than he. Never was man with greater bravery than this man of 21. You will have guessed that the boat was manned by British soldiers. You will guess their errand on this lonely shore. Whether the watchful loyalist of the night before knew Hale and sent a message to the British, we cannot tell. We know only that the brave boy stood on the shore with six British muskets leveled at his head. "Surrender or die," was the curt order. A moment later, the boat moved off, bearing among the red-coated soldiers a suspected spy. Carried to a nearby British guardship, Hale was searched, and the papers found in his shoes. Nothing more was needed to prove him the spy they believed him to be. Taken now to the headquarters of General Howe, the British commander-in-chief, Hale made no effort to conceal his name and rank, or the work he had been doing, and why. We are told that General Howe was moved to pity by the fine, frank manner of the young officer, but he had no power to change the fate reserved for spies. He ordered Hale to be hanged before sunrise next morning. Hale was led away. The last night of Nathan Hale's life was spent alone under strong guard. Who can guess the thoughts that filled those wakeful hours? There is nothing to cause the belief that for a moment he felt regret for what he had done. He had been close to success and life. An unhappy chance had sharply turned his step toward failure and death. He must face death as he had faced the task now to be forever unfinished, with calm decision and with a love of country so great as to blot out all else. Long before morning light, the prisoner was sent under guard to be delivered into the hands of the executioner. The last test of the patriot spy was at hand. A brutal man was the provost marshal into whose hands Hale fell. No last insult was too great for him to offer. Denied a minister, denied a Bible, denied even permission to write a farewell word to his mother. The hero, Hale, sat silent in a tent while the final preparations were being made. A pitying officer brought a Bible and a paper for letters. The boy wrote to his mother, his sisters, his sweetheart. But even that small comfort was of brief duration. The provost marshal read the letters and tore them to fragments before his victim's eyes. He said he had no idea of letting the rebels know they had a man who could die with such firmness. Let us draw a veil over the rest of the sad story, lifting it only for a moment to catch the last words of Nathan Hale. In the last moment of Hale's life, the provost marshal tauntingly demanded a confession. Hale seemed not to hear him. With his fine head still lifted fearlessly, he looked out and through and beyond any taunts of men, and then he spoke to himself, or perhaps to the world. To you, to me. These were his words. I only regret that I have but one life to give for my country. And then he died. And by his death glorified the name of Spy, for he loved his country, and he served her with his life, choosing not the shining road to fame and glory, but the darker one to lonely and embittered death. And the light of his devotion lights the path forever. Bye-bye. See you next time.